Hey, everybody, coming up next on Ham Nation, we celebrate two milestone anniversaries with two game-changing organizations, 25 years of QRZ, 20 years of Elecraft. Plus, we'll have a bunch of other stuff, including Newsline, Dr. T, and chat room questions. It's going to be a great show, and you're going to love it. It's all coming up next on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. By DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 379 for December 5th, 2018. Celebrating milestone anniversaries, Elecraft and QRZ.
Greetings, everybody. No, your television's not broke. My computer video's broke. This is Bob Heil, and we welcome you to a really great show tonight here on Ham Nation. I don't know what happened to the computers. Both of them are down. I don't know. Anyway, I got audio. That's all that counts, because we've got some really great things tonight, and there will be great video afterwards. First of all, we have Amanda with us, and she's going to be with us all the way to the end, so we want questions. Amanda, how are you and Jeff doing?
We're doing excellent, and we're in the Christmas spirit, by the way. I just want to let everyone know we're going to be taking questions, but only for our special guest tonight, so let's keep it to that, and we can talk Elecraft, we can talk QRZ, whatever you want to do. Let's just keep it for our special guests. Thank you. We'll see you at the end of the show.
Okay, well, we're all going to be there, Amanda. Normally we drop out, but tonight we're all here. Don, how are you doing? You're doing well, I'm sure, and you'll be here all the way to the end, right?
I'll be here until they kick me out, as a matter of fact. And I want to say hello to our WTWW listeners on the big giant shortwave at 5085. And some cool stuff going on, because it is the Christmas season. WTWW is now in the throes of playing the greatest Christmas hits of all time on 5085. And in fact, you can get in on the fun, send your pics of your shortwave receiver all decked out for holiday cheer, and you might be the big winner of the best dressed radio. They're having prizes and everything. So send pics and or video to email at WTWW.us of your dressed up radio. Also, you can call the WTWW Merry Christmas Worldwide Hotline and share Christmas cheer and New Year's greetings with listeners all around the globe. You can tell the world about your family, your city, your life, anything else you care to share, and WTWW will put you on the air. That number is 833-390-5085, 833-390-5085. The email address is email at WTWW.us, and get in the Christmas spirit and share it worldwide, Bob. It's a cool thing.
Absolutely. Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I'll be there on the big world. It's they're doing Christmas music, so we'll catch you there. This is a very, very special night on Ham Nation. It's two, not one, but two anniversaries. First of all, it is the 25th anniversary of QRZ, and we all use QRZ. I use it several times a day. And we're going to go down and talk to Fred in just a minute, but we have a very special guest, two of them, in studio from Elecraft. Looky here, it's Wayne and Eric, and it's their 20th anniversary. Congratulations, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
We're going to be thank back you. Later and find out a little bit more about how you got here, where you're going, and you got a whole bunch of goodies, it looks like, on the table there. So we'll be back in about 20 minutes, and we're going to find out about Elecraft. Thanks for being there and holding down the fort. We're going to have some fun. So here we go. We're going to go back down to Arizona, And we've got Gordo and Fred Lloyd from good old QRZ. Take her away, you guys.
Well, thanks, Bob. And we're delighted to be in Arizona at the QRZ.com main station. Fred, we are delighted to be here. And happy birthday, Fred.
Well, thank you, Gordon. It's my 65th birthday, and so that's why I'm calling it the 6525.
Oh, 6525. Now, before we get started, Rick Paquette, representing the American Radio Relay League, as section manager. Rick, what have we got? We got a lot of things going on in your section.
Yes, we do. And it's a nice warm here in Arizona. I know the rest of the United States is pretty cold, but we're having a lot of fun for you. We had a great party on Saturday at our big ham fest in Mesa, Arizona, and feated Fred with a really great presentation and a nice piece of cake from everybody. And Gordo was there to welcome everyone to, as well. If you want to go online and see on Facebook, you can go to ARRL Arizona. And if you search for that, you'll find our webpage. Or you can go to ARRL-Arizona.org, O-R-G, and that's our state webpage as well. Thank you, Gordo.
Well, thank you for having us aboard in your section. And wow, we are delighted to be here for the big birthday celebration.
Well, not as delighted as I am.
Well, Fred, how did all this get started?
Oh, yeah, it's been 25 years. I was on the internet before the World Wide Web existed.
Wow.
And a bunch of people suggested that it'd be nice to have call book on a computer, and so I made that happen.
Oh, that is terrific.
I just wanted to mention one thing that we just completed a giant sweepstakes at QRZ, and there were some fantastic prizes that we just gave out. In fact, I'd like to just read off a couple names. We just announced on QRZ a few minutes ago that WB5WAJ, Jerry in Franklin, Tennessee, he won the Graciela Key. My goodness, look at this thing. This is a Bugatti Graciela Jr. What a fantastic piece of equipment this is. We also have a Comet Antenna Analyzer, VE4 AFC, Andrew Clemens in Canada. The Heil, Bob, one of your Heil Parametric Receive Audio System and the kit that you put together for us was super fantastic. That was won by one of your neighbors in Missouri, William E. Fuller, KE0IRU. So congratulations goes out to him. We also gave away earlier a R-Finder radio. That's one of the radios that's a combination UHF radio and cell phone. That was won by Chris Wilcox, W3CJW, in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. And then our two really big prizes, the ICOM 7610. That was won by Fred Johnson, KK4ZT, in Thomasville, North Carolina. And the Yaesu, not released yet, FTDX101D, was won by Gerald Fry, W7PT, in Port Townsend, Washington. I'd like to say congratulations to all those people, because I know that they're really, really going to enjoy those prizes. So I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Well, I think that's great. And, you know, we look around the QRZ.com studio, wires everywhere, but you made it happen. And how about telling us the very beginning days of QRZ.com, Fred?
Okay. Well, I'll put a picture up on the slide there. That was the very first iteration of QRZ. In fact, it was a dial-up bulletin board, believe it or not. In March of 1993, we put out a CD-ROM, and that CD was used then to power this bulletin board, and that's how we got that thing started. Later in the year, in October, we went on the internet for the first time. You know, in October 1993, do you know who wasn't on the internet? Google wasn't on the internet. Facebook wasn't on the internet. Yahoo wasn't on the internet.
Wow.
We were one of the first. In fact, we were one of the first 25,000 websites in existence. You know, given that there are several million of them now, we were early adopters. But that's what that's what it looked like. It was just that one computer there on the right side of your screen. By the late 90s, I had moved into a closet, and more computers and more data. That was the high speed setup there. That was T1, that was 1.6 megabits.
Man, you were like flying, sort of.
Well, compared to a modem, yes. And then this is what the QRZ homepage used to look like. That was around 1997. And you'll see a little tiny picture of the Mir space station on that. That picture there represented the fact that the QRZ CD actually flew on the Mir space station. I sent a copy of it down to the Johnson Space Center, and those guys in the Mir really appreciated it. They kept getting copies for a few years, but later on, now in the International Space Station, they don't want my CD anymore.
Wow, that's great.
You know why they don't want it? They have internet.
There you go. All right, what's next, Fred?
Well, as the system grew, it became a bit larger. We got more servers going. This was a new location in Phoenix. We had two T1 lines. Now
we're
up to 3 megabits. And then our next move was into a data center in 2004, 10 megabits. We were really excited about that. Still the same equipment, however, and I was starting to travel around the country quite a bit, and it became dangerous for me to travel and be away from the equipment. So then when we came back, we moved all of our entire infrastructure to the Amazon cloud, and it looked something like that.
Oh my goodness.
We've never seen the server that we're on, and we like it that way. So I just wanted to mention also that we've been doing a few awards. I don't know if people had seen them before up close, but we have several awards at QRZ. This is the Continents Awards, the DX Awards. If you log into QRZ, you'll find that we offer quite a few different awards, and many people are really been impressed with the quality of them, as have I. So yes, we have a few of them right here as a fact. I think they're better on the screen anyway. But anyway, they're very nice awards. But I also wanted to show you a picture of the QRZ family here. These are the people that make QRZ happen. Starting on the left side of the screen there in the blue shirt, that's Stephen McLaughlin, VA7STV. He's from Canada, and he's our engineer. He does all the magic programming now. In the rear back there is Chris. He's the guy, the engineer, working our video today. And on the right side is Todd. He's our support engineer, KG7MAK. And then Jamie sitting next to him. She's our chief operating officer, the CEO, Jamie, KF7WIS. And in the front, my lovely wife, Robin Lloyd. There's our antenna. Not really.
Not really.
I liked it, though.
I love it.
Yeah. And so that was about it, really. I had a few more slides of a project that we did at QRZ. How many minutes do we have?
Yeah, we're good.
Six
we'll fly
minutes?
Through them.
Okay, we'll fly through them. I built an antenna for my RV. I had a big motorhome, and
right.
This antenna was designed to lay down on the roof. It's a lay-down antenna, not unlike the Tar Heel type of antenna.
Now you're talking long.
And it's the RV itself was 45 feet long.
That's
the
long.
The antenna was 16 feet long, and there's a picture of it there. You can see the antenna would just come up and automatically show you what that looked like. I built it here in my shop, and I used an actuator, a linear actuator. That was pretty cheap. It was only like $30 or $40 on eBay. And I just put these pieces together and made a raising mechanism for it. And there you see it mounted on top the bus.
Wow.
And some of the detail, that was the insulator, the center insulator right there.
Oh, wow.
Machined out of Teflon and in the center of that tube. That's when it laid down, it didn't lay on the roof, it laid on these plastic mounts that I made, and there you see the antenna on its mount there, laying along on the left side. Here's a picture of me machining out some of the plastic that made that, and then in some places I put rubber around it so that it wouldn't rattle when driving down the road. Worked for me. And there's a picture of the two holding positions. That was the inner control panel. This was an SGC 230. Type of tuner, and that was a control panel on the inside for raising and lowering it. There's some of the hand wiring, and there it was. I had an ICOM 7000 hooked up to this thing, and that was the first version of the SGC tuner. That didn't work out so well because it leaked. It actually got water in it.
Yeah.
And so I remounted it inside of a pelican box.
Oh,
those things,
wow.
I mean, you know, they'll float. And that pelican box was really, really nice and did a great job of keeping it waterproof. Then, when I was all done with that, I decided I need a headstand. I can't do a headstand, so I decided to make one. And here it is. It was machined out of solid brass that I got from the scrapyard, and that's what it looked like when it was done. And once I mounted the 7,000 head on it, it became the perfect desktop accessory.
Oh, now.
Yeah.
The best part of this whole operation, go ahead, show us that great slide.
There you go.
It is. Wow. Now, what kind of gear do you have there?
Well, I've got a milling machine, as you see there, and a lathe. And I've got a few other, you know, a grinder and a saw and things like that. But,
and all computer controlled?
No, it's not all computer controlled. It's manual mostly. And
thread control.
But yeah, it's my second hobby. I have too many hobbies, they say, but, you know, machine shop and grinding metal is one of them. So we've had a good time with that.
And, that's true. Oh, is that you?
Yeah,
wow.
There's a picture of me working on something in my Santa Claus outfit.
Oh, you look great. Yeah. Now, Fred, they're going to go live with us again. How about telling us the future for QRZ viewers and computer folks that tune in to all that you have to offer on QRZ? We've got a couple of minutes.
Okay. Well, the first thing that we're going to be doing at QRZ in the coming year, I should say, is it's time for a redesign of the call sign pages. Now, hold your breath. We're going to keep everything we already have. The pages that you've designed are not going to change. But the menus and sort of the general layout of the site, we're going to refresh it. We're going to be using new software written in a more modern programming language. And why? Why are we messing with something that works? Well, the software that you see there right now is about 10 years old. It was written in 2008. Yes, it's 21st
wow.
century software, but hey, anything that's 10 years old in the computer business is a goner, let me tell you. We need new software, and that's what we're going to work on this year. And, of course, while we're doing it, we're going to throw in a bunch of new features that you're going to like. And so that's what we have high hopes for this year, Bob.
Oh, that's great. Well, we've seen the studios. We've seen all that you have going for QRZ.com. Fred, let's do a wrap-up, but tell them the best part of QRZ.com. One-stop shopping, huh, for info.
Well, the best part of QRZ are the members, the people that come and visit us and make QRZ what it is today. We're eternally thankful for the loyalty and the sponsorships that we have. And I just feel blessed every day. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, all of our Ham Nation viewers, thank you. Bob Heil, thanks you. And Fred, thank you for allowing us to come and see your great location here. And
I wanted to mention,
Yes,
Gordon is our newest lifetime platinum member at QRZ. We awarded him the certificate earlier this evening.
Well, thank you so much. And we're going to be using the heck out of that, Susie and I. Well, on behalf of Ham Nation, thanks for allowing us to come this far and drop in and see the QRZ.com. And Fred, continued success. Happy birthday and happy 25.
Thank you, Gordon. Really appreciate it.
All right, Don, back to you.
Man, just the best interview ever, Gordon. Fred Lloyd, my Lord, the things you have done to revolutionize how we as hams operate and making it easy to look each other up, to send QSL cards, et cetera, share information. You have put a phrase into the vernacular, I'm good on QRZ. That's just amazing. You've revolutionized how we do ham radio. And somebody else that's revolutionized how we do mortgages is Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. And this episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Let's just talk about buying a home for a minute. You know, you're going to have a place to put your antenna, so you may as well just, you know, buy a lot and put a house on it. Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home. And quite frankly, it's the cause of a lot of anxiety. So our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans are doing something about it. It's called the Power Buying Process. And it's really revolutionary. And it's simple as well. Answer a few simple questions. They'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. Quicken Loans will then verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval, which gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And then once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First thing they'll do is lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. The best part about that is if the rates go up, your rate stays the same. And if the rates go down, your rate also drops. So either way, it's a win-win. It's the kind of thinking you would expect, quite frankly, from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rate Shield approval is only available on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. And, of course, we do appreciate everything that Rocket Mortgage does for us to help us put our little dog and pony show on. It's time to go back to Bob because not only do we have big doings over at QRZ, we've got big doings at Elecraft. Bob?
Well, we do, and I'm sure glad that we could have this great show tonight. Sorry my video's not working, but that's okay. My video's not important. Who's important are these two gentlemen in studio.
Hey, Bob.
Eric, I'm so glad to see you at the studio. Sorry your old college buddy's not with you. And Wayne, just fabulous to see you guys. Everybody knows about Elecraft, and you made it happen, and I want you to tell us how it started. I know that it was back in 1971, so whoever wants to take over for a little bit, tell us how you got together and made this wonderful company happen.
Well, go ahead. Something about, 1971 isn't really when Elecraft started, but that is the year that Eric and I were both first licensed, and interestingly, Eric's call is WA6HHQ, and mine at the time was WA6HQH, so it was fate. We didn't even know it.
Sort of California karma there. We didn't Wayne was down in San Diego area, and I was up in the San Francisco Bay Area, so just coincidentally, we end up bumping into each other quite a bit later after that.
So I guess the real genesis of Elecraft actually goes back prior to Elecraft to the NorCal QRP Club. I had been designing a little bit of gear as club projects, and it so happened that Eric got a hold of one of the NorCal 40 kits and did a bang-up job of building it, and then he one-upped everybody by increasing the power output. And then there was a bit of friendly gloating when I found out from him that he had worked 100 countries on his NorCal 40 on 40 meters, which is not an easy task at 5 watts. I knew Eric was a guy I'd like to work with, and he did eventually help me out with some NorCal kit projects too.
Yeah, actually,
well,
go ahead, Bob.
You guys knew what to do with the soldering iron. I think that's the big deal, is that you were building all kinds of ham radio stuff while you were. You had a day job.
We were both Silicon Valley guys. Wayne was working over for a think tank. Interval Research, one of Paul Allen's think tanks. And I was running a company called Verisys that makes SCSI-based, believe it or not, protocol analyzers, like a network analyzer. And I was getting bored with that because the company was doing well, but I wasn't doing enough electronics stuff. And bought a NorCal 40 at a local ham fest from some guys. Didn't know Wayne even existed when I bought that. Started showing up at the NorCal QRP meetings, and it was funny because I'm not a QRP guy, at least I wasn't at that time. I had the big alpha and the big station chasing DX and stuff.
We converted him.
No, actually, I found it was a lot of fun to do both, but and it worked out really well. But though I actually have had Wayne, just as an aside, Wayne came over one time, I think after the K2 came out, and I had it at my shack, and I had a Yagi up versus some wires Wayne had at his house. I didn't tell him the alpha was turned on and was hooked up to the back of the K2. And Wayne was saying, boy, people are coming back to me real fast tonight. It's working great. I was just laughing. After
Eric's making this up as he goes
along. No, this is not actually. This did happen, but a lot of fun stuff.
No, Eric had a very impressive station in the man cave, which is almost the lowest level of his house in Aptos, which you actually have to get to by descending through a Jeffrey's tube or something, a staircase, or a ladder. And so anyway, Eric and I had a lot of fun, and I think it'd be interesting to talk about where the K2 actually came from. So the first thing that Eric and I did together was operate field day as often as possible. And we went through a few years of field days together operating NorCal QRP gear. So we had the NorCal 40s, and then we had the, we had the Sierras, NorCal Sierras. We had a couple of those. And at some point, we were just looking at this table full of field day gear, which included two radios, two antenna switches, SWR meters, Keyer paddles, power or batteries. Yeah. And, you know, we just took a look at that and we're thinking, wow, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we could get all of this stuff in one box? So we literally developed a K2 on the backs of napkins during one field day. We stopped operating, kicked back in my VW van, and we were literally piecing together this idea for the K2.
Yeah, we literally, like you said, brought some pieces of paper and we're sketching on stuff. Though it took more than just that one night, I think. But this is actually when the bands go, you know, it's more dead late at night at 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that, and you're still hyped up on coffee.
And, well, one of the things that I really thought was very cool that you guys did, back in, I think it was 1998 late or 1999, you had the K2 design pretty well done, but you built 100 of them and put them out in a field test.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That is amazing because most of the manufacturers have built something and it's on the market. And you guys, you knew that it was going to really work because you had these field tests. Tell us a little bit about that. That is incredible.
Yeah, there's actually two pieces to that. Part of it's the technical, make sure it works right. And you know, I got to realize we were two guys literally in our basements. Wayne lives 60 miles north of me. I'm down in Aptos, south of Santa Cruz on the Monterey Bay. And Wayne's up in Belmont, and they have labs at both places when we were first starting. So you know, we'd be late at night talking on the phone and on radio or whatever and working on these things. But as we built stuff up, we knew that we didn't have a large resource of engineering or anything like that to get stuff beyond our two of us when we first started the company. We have a lot more folks now. And we wanted to obviously make sure these things worked before we made too many of them beyond what we could see in the lab. And so we signed up 100 guys. They purchased the radios ahead of time, everything, and that helped us, of course, purchase the parts and get that going. And that was our field test team, and they gave us great feedback. The deal was we gave them a discount on the radio, a little one. Man, they also would get upgraded if we had to redo boards. For instance, our front panel board had some internal shorts on it or some strange thing that
we don't talk about.
PC
that
board layout. But we swapped all those out. We found it before it went out to all 100 guys, I think the first 10 guys. But there was a second half to all of this. That did a great job, and we still do that, testing out all the radios with field test people. But the other part was really a marketing thing. If you think about it, if you've got 100 folks that have built their radios, it must work better, right? Because 10 dB better because you built it. And it did work well. We actually exceeded our design goals when we did it. But we had 100 guys that would start telling their friends about it. And as you know, ham radio is a large part of its word of mouth. And if you trust the person you're talking to, you're going to listen to what they have to say about a radio they like. And so that worked out well for us. I think we were sort of just hoping that would happen, and it actually was sort of beyond our wildest dreams afterwards.
Yeah,
you know about our pine board project here that's mm-hmm. really been something this year, much more than I envisioned. We've got hundreds of people now building. How we know that is from the parts kits that's being sold. And tell us a little bit about, you still make kits. We can buy a whole that's kit from you and sit down and put her on the air, right?
Yeah, actually, Bob, let me show you a couple things. And Josh, I'm going to first pick up the K2 here so people can see it. I've got a little battery back powering it up right now. This is the first radio we did. I have a plexiglass cover. I'm going to push it underneath here, the top camera. If you can do the top-down camera, I'll get that underneath. Josh, are the top cameras not working?
No, we're just going to tilt it
I'll
up.
Tilt it that way.
Yeah.
So you can see the insides. I got it. I'll get there the glare off of it. So basically, this is the K2. We've been selling this one since I think the first one shipped January 30th, 1999. And this is like a Heath kit. You could solder everything together. I can get it a little bit over there so they can see it. It does not come with the clear plexiglass cover. This is from a trade show version. But you can see all the parts. Everything has to be soldered in by the builder. Everything comes organized in bags. But basically, you can build this and get a, you know, say, hey, I built my whole HF radio. It's the only 100% solder HF, actually 160 through 10 meters radio out there. So sideband CW and so on. By the way, there's modules. You can plug in a sideband module, noise blanker module, 160 module. That's not so much so people can buy it incrementally if they want to. The cool thing here was we could design it incrementally. So we designed it CW radio first, then got the sideband part working and so on when we were very small. So that's what the K2 looks like, just to get a feel. But we're still selling those. We've been able to still get parts for it. And we have a 100-watt amp that goes in the top cover if you want to have a full 100-watt radio. And it's done very well.
So, Bob, you mentioned the field testers, and I just wanted to comment that that those 100 intrepid field testers went on to become, in many cases, not just the grandfathered in first 100 Hellacraft customers, but also Elmer's. A lot of them went on to help other people build and test their K2s, and we got great feedback from them. They were very highly competent and risk-averse group. And so they really helped us refine that first radio, refine the manual, the firmware. And that tradition really continues at Hellacraft. We field test everything, and it's partly to ring out the hardware, as Eric mentioned, but also we ring out the firmware and the features, the owner's manual.
And we add features, too. At that.
Yeah. With all of our radios, we've kind of develop them in a bit of an a la carte fashion, where we start with the basic radio and then add the option modules as we go along, which has worked out really well for our customers, both in terms of configurability of their system to do what they want it to, and also to upgrade it as they have time and inclination to do it. But I did have just one more little story about the K2. So I mentioned the K2 evolved during field day, and the thing about field day that is really crucial to understanding Hellacraft is that field day is kind of like a crucible of two aspects of radio design. One is the aspect of performance, and Eric has, from the beginning, Eric really pushed hard for performance and features that would make the K2 really be a, feel like a desktop radio, a traditional desktop radio. And the other aspect that field day really helps bring out is this notion of portability, especially for QRP gear. We put the emphasis on low current drain. For example, the K2 is a very high performance radio and only draws about 150 to 200 milliamps, which was kind of unheard of at the time. So we literally forged the K2 in this crucible of field day. And so what happened after that, and really the way to kind of trace the lineage of all of our products, is that we went with both high performance and portability in most of the rest of our product line. So one of the derivatives that we spun off from the K2 was this little radio called a K1, which is about half the size of a K2, continuing the portability tradition. And then later on, we came out with something called a KX1. Josh, you got the KX1 shot over there?
That's the fourth little shot across the top.
There we go. So. Yeah. Yeah, there's yours truly holding a KX1, which...
And Wayne's a great hand model. You notice that he trimmed his nails.
Yeah, I like the soft focus on that, too. That's nice. So this was kind of our idea for how to really make a radio portable, which is you basically, if it's a CW rig, you put a keyer paddle directly on the rig.
Yeah.
And so that helps keep the keyer paddle stable without having to have a 2-pound keyer base. So that was one lineage. The K3, which I think Eric is chomping at the bit to show you here, the K3 is the other track that came out of this field day crucible, which is the really high performance radio. So, Eric, you want to say?
I was going to show something real quick on the K. You mentioned that KX.
Oh, here's another one of our
the KX2, which I see some of the guys in the chat room are talking about. This is exactly the same almost size as the original KX1. This one's all mode. So it's sideband CW data modes built in for PSK31 and RT2Y.
And all bands, too.
And AM, I think, too. And all HF, all the way 100, actually 80.
80 through 10.
80 through 10.
Yeah, all HF bands.
KX3, which we didn't bring, the big brother to this one, is 160 through 6 on there, plus a 2-meter option for that one, which is pretty cool. Yeah, Josh, I'm going to come back to the wide picture here for a second, or actually from the side shot. One other cool thing, by the way, I mentioned the K3 back here. Pull back a little bit. I'll turn that back on just for a second so you can see it light up. There, she's awake. So the KTs are our current high-performance radio. And the black radios here, the K3, KX2, and the K30, which I'll talk about in a second. All of these guys, I think I've killed my battery on that one. This is a little battery I had in the back. Normally it's powered off something else. No, I left it on for a while. You can't easily. Oops. With a connector. But
technical problem.
Now, basically, these radios are, at least the K3 and the KX3, are modular kits. I saw someone asking earlier about that. Basically, these are boards are already pre-soldered because they're surface mount, but the full assembly in terms of building the boards, going through the final checkout of the rig, which actually the firmware and the microprocessor does a lot of the checkout for you, but you walk through it. So you fully understand how that radio goes together. A lot of guys like that because they can modify the radios and hack them afterwards, and it's sort of cool that way. So you have the K2 over here, which has the 100% soldered together all the way up through the K3, our current radio. And just to go the full spectrum, obviously portability, the soda guys love this KX2, by the way. This one uses a little lithium ion, 2.4 amp hour battery.
Yeah, let me do
it. Pull back to a full picture. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, just a word about the KX2. So personally, this is a radio that that I've really wanted ever since I was a kid. When I was, 14 or so and first got my license, there was a guy up the street who had an 11 meter AM 5 watt handheld, and he was telling me about how in 1957 he could stand out in front of his house and work Australia with a whip. And so coming up with a radio that could be that versatile and small actually has been a dream of both Eric and mine, ever since we did the KX1, our first small radio. So the KX2 is really an unusual radio. It weighs 13 ounces. It's about the same weight as an old HTX1 2 meter handheld from Radio Shack. So just 13 ounces, a nice weight for an HT. It has a built-in automatic antenna tuner option, the lithium ion battery, and there's an attachable keyer paddle, which we don't have right here, but also has a built-in microphone. So this is literally a 10 watt all HF band HT, and I frequently use it that way myself, and a lot of our soda customers do too. So, for example, you could put a whip antenna on here. We've got a new whip antenna called an AX1. You put that on here, and you can actually operate 20, 17, and 15 meters just handheld.
And that's Uber geek mode too, because you have the trailing wire for your ground wire afterwards.
You have to show. You got to choose your locations carefully when you're doing pedestrian mobile, but it's a blast. I mean, I was out at one of our local parks about a month ago, and I was just walking along with the whip, with the handheld, and literally operating CW while I was hiking. Of course, I didn't tell anybody I was talking to about that. They would have probably not believed me. And we frequently get that kind of disbelief when you're working DX. That same day I worked Japan sideband running 10 watts with the whip. Yeah. So it can be done. You just need a band opening.
One last thing, Bob.
You just have really made the whole radio fun. That's the whole deal. It's fun. And we can build it. We can change it and do whatever. I want to ask you here in closing out, I want to ask you one question. What makes Elecraft so good? And I think I'm looking at the two answers to this, but what's your answer to what makes Elecraft so good?
I'll take the first answer to that, Bob. There's a couple of things, one of which is relentless customer service. And obviously, good designs. We both are absolute design maniacs, both in terms of usability, cool radios in terms of big and small ones, and high performance. But in any hobby like ours, there's a wide range of people, different expertise, and so on. And these are serious radios. They're not something you're going to throw away because if it doesn't work, you want to keep it going. And if you have a problem or don't know how to use it, we've got a whole team of people we've built over the years that answers on the internet, telephone, and wandering our front door sometimes. We won't let people fail, either building the radios or operating with them. So that's a big deal. And then, we're performance nuts. That's the other really big thing that makes it work. And plus, we're still having fun at it. It's sort of scary. Working together 20 years is like a marriage sometimes. And let's just say our employees have seen us at all different modes of operation, and they'll be amazed that we'll be going together and having dinner afterwards too, and it works out pretty well. So it's still fun.
Yeah, we occasionally use the new AX1 whips for jousting after engineering meetings.
Well, I tell you, this has been something I've been trying to put together for a long time. You guys are good friends. We see you at all the shows, but we're always so darn busy. And I wanted you to come on and tell us about the whole Elecraft, I call it a happening, because it certainly has been a happening, and it's getting people to building again. That's the cool thing. I talk to a lot of people that buy our microphones and to use in them, and they're building. And
Bob, I'd say it works out about half the people buy the build, because we sell the radios that our kits also, except for the K2, which is 100% build, but the KX3, K3, and so on. those radios you can buy either built or kit. So you get the choice, because obviously some folks don't have the time or the ability to build. But that's exciting, doing both of those. That works out real well for us.
Absolutely. Well, I want you to stick around, because I know we're going to have some questions from the chat room. I personally appreciate you coming. I'm sorry my video didn't work, but we didn't need my video. We needed yours, and it worked out really super. So
certainly an honor to be interviewed by you, Bob. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well,
thank you, and you're in the prestigious podcast studio in the country, good old Leo Laporte, and you're holding down the fort really well. Right beside is 330 Jay Collins. I love it. Well, let's go see what Don's got to do before we come back. Well, I know he has some questions for you. So, Don, you got your soldering iron out? What do you think is going to happen there, huh?
Well, I don't have it out handy right now, because it tends to be sharp and hot, and those are two things that usually don't work very well with me. But I'll tell you what works well for Ellicraft, and that is the passion that these two guys have, and passion is infectious, if that's the word that I'm looking for. It's catching. It's catching.
We're not lying.
I can remember my first year going to Dayton Hamvention was 1999, and I can remember guys walking around with Ellicraft shirts and having their serial numbers on their shirt or on their hat or on their call sign.
Oh, hey, we actually have a picture of that. Can you key up the one with the guys? There's a K2 with a bunch of guys. I think it's the second right there. Somebody sent a customer started walking up at shows, introduced him. Hi, I'm Bill W6XYZ, serial number 2723. And we go, okay. And the next guy goes, and after they were all memorizing their serial numbers. And these guys over in Germany, I believe it was Germany, have all their radios there, K1s, KX1, which don't make either of those anymore, and the K2s. They dialed up as the frequency. It's hard to see in this picture. Their serial numbers on it. And they sent this into our website. That was one of our earlier ones. So I knew we had a crazy audience out there. That was great.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, and the passion, like I said, is catching, and you guys are just such an asset to amateur radio. And look at here, I have the latest DX Engineering catalog, and if you turn over to page 6, featured new products, there's a bunch of Ellicraft stuff right there.
Yeah, they have some of our XG3 and some of our small modular kits where people want to get started in building. The very simple stuff in terms of attenuators, small signal generator.
Test equipment.
And, you know, basic little test equipment type stuff, dummy loads and things like that. So we want to reel you in with that and get you into the bigger stuff, of course. But we hooked up with them just to do that stuff, and it's worked out
really
well.
But we're training the next generation of Elmers.
There we go.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, gentlemen. We appreciate y'all being here. Let me tell you something else that's cool about this catalog. Having all the pictures, you can do what my son used to do with a Toys R Us catalog. You can go through and you can cut out the pictures of the things that you want to put on your Christmas list for your significant other, XYL, etc. That's what my son used to do with the Toys R Us catalog. Cut the pictures out and tape it on a piece of paper and leave us notes. Because the OMs and YLs in your life, they want to give you something special this holiday season, and why not make it as easy as possible? Don't bother cutting stuff out. Just give them this, because this has everything that they need. DX Engineering makes shopping simple by offering an array of gifts for hams, and there are three surefire ideas that any ham would love to unwrap. The latest edition of the ARRL Handbook, the most widely used one-stop reference and guide to radio technology principles and practices. And here's what you'll find in the brand new 2019 edition. It's available in hardcover and paperback, 1,280 pages covering nearly every radio topic, packed with new projects and content, including the latest on Solar Cycle 24 and amateur radio data platforms. If you haven't got the new ARRL Handbook in a few years, this is one that you really want to put on your work shelf, because you'll be going back to it over and over again. I know broadcast engineers who use the ARRL Handbook as a reference. It's packed, like I said, new projects, content, radio electronics and theory and principles, circuit design and equipment, radio signal transmission and propagation, antennas and transmission lines. Of course, a lot of that stuff is evergreen. It doesn't really change, but new component tables, reference articles, guidelines for SDR design, and some of the more cutting-edge stuff. Also, here's something else, maybe an antenna analyzer from Rig Expert. You could probably put that in your stocking, or your XYL could put it in your stocking for you. It's a practical gift for fast troubleshooting and tuning antennas to resonance, and DX Engineering offers a wide selection of Rig Expert analyzers and a huge range of prices and coverages. They make it simple to test for SWR, impedance, return loss, and more. They're also useful for checking coax cable assemblies. They feature straightforward controls, large LCD screens, PC connectivity, models with zoom-in capabilities, and embedded Bluetooth technology as well. Upgrade your gifting by adding a sturdy Nanook case to protect specific models of the Rig Expert analyzers. And if your resolution for 2019 is to enjoy operating in the great outdoors, well, DX Engineering has the answer. The latest handheld transceivers from ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, Elinco, and Bridgecom. Choose from HD models suited for any budget, from economical 2-meter units to the most advanced digital models. Spectacularly clear audio and hundreds of memory channels, GPS position reporting. The list goes on and on. Plus, make DX Engineering your source for HD accessories like battery packs and chargers, speaker mics, carrying cases, belt clips, cable adapters, desk stands, and more. And for the new ham in your life, DX Engineering has HT startup packages, including the radio, the software, upgraded antenna, and speaker mic or headset to make it easy to get on the air. And that's the thing, man. You get that license, you got to get on the air. And DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. Proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering is helping you and me and everybody else shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. So you got to check those guys out. We love DX Engineering. Bob?
We love you guys, let me tell you. DX Engineering is just something so very special. I'll have to tell you, maybe next week I can tell you about my great visit there last week. Jerry Lynch, our sales manager, and myself, we spent a great time there. And we were guided through the tour with Mel, so it was pretty special. But gosh, what an incredible company. And if you ever get to Talmadge, you got to stop by. It's near Akron, so spend some time. And I do, while I have the microphone working, you do not want to miss next week, because we're going to have K3LR in person, and he has put up a new tower. And you have to be here to see what an incredible thing that was. So it'll be fun next week. So we'll have all this working next week. But we did pretty good, I think, didn't we, Don?
Only
audio for me, but it worked. But I'm seeing you guys on my phone, believe it or not. Okay, well, I know you have really good news for us. So let's go back and see what Newsline has this week, Don.
Let's do that. Here's the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2144, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, December 5th, 2018. There's positive news for shortwave radio's return to Australia. It's election season and campaign promises are being made.
The end of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's shortwave services in January 2017 hit hard here in Australia, especially among remote communities and in the Northern Territory, VK8. Pressure was put on the federal government to restore what was for many a lifeline. Now, with an election looming in 2019, a Labor government under opposition leader Bill Shorten has vowed to provide the $2 million in funds the independent national broadcaster needs to bring services back. In late November, Shadow Minister for Regional Communications Stephen Jones vowed, along with Senator Mulindary McCarthy and Warren Snowden, that victory in the elections would bring a revival of ABC shortwave. Advocates for the return of service applauded the announcement. They included Chris Knott, president of the Northern Territory Cattlemen's Association, who said that HF shortwave radio transmitters are a necessity in the bush, where mobile and data coverage doesn't exist for FM and AM radio. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
It was firefighters' turn to help ham radio operators recently by offering a special gift in St. Paul, Minnesota.
In Minnesota, the St. Paul Fire Department is coming to the aid of the Salvation Army's Northern Division Emergency Services with an estimated $18,000 in radio equipment it no longer needs. If the St. Paul City Council approves the gift, the Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network, or SATERN, will be able to expand its reach in Minnesota and North Dakota when responding to natural disasters. That's critical in a region that has suffered numerous weather-related emergencies over the years, including massive floodings of the Red River impacting the Fargo, North Dakota area. A report on KSTP-TV News noted that greater deployment of ham radio operators during such events gives crews tighter control on the kind of aid they are able to deliver because of enhanced communications. Officials also told the TV News that the added radio coverage, especially when communication networks are down, also creates greater efficiency and safety, whether it's for the delivery of meals, supplies, flood kits, or some other assistance. According to the KSTP report, some of the donated radios will be installed in a 17-foot mobile command center with a 50-foot antenna. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
To see the KSTP TV story for yourself, just go to KSTP.com, click the magnifying glass icon in the upper right, and search for ham radio. Students in the Bloomington High School South Amateur Radio Club, K9SOU in Bloomington, Indiana, are being recognized for their operating abilities.
Trevor Cutchell, Zach Casper, and Adam Terry were part of the school's team in October for the latest school club roundup. According to the preliminary scores, the team took first place in the high school division, as well as overall. The club has placed first in the last two school club roundups in the high school division as well, so an official win this year would give them a three-peat. Local media are interviewing the students this week, and they have received a special invitation from the Monroe County Community School Corporation to be recognized at their next school board meeting. Celebration of success is a regular part of each board meeting where the school corporation employees, students, and volunteers who make a difference in schools and in the community are recognized. The ceremony will take place on December 18th. The students made 746 unique contacts in the last roundup, which included all 50 states, 8 provinces, 33 countries, and 44 other schools. School Club Roundup is sponsored by the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club and the ARRL. Final results are still pending. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3-TZD.
Newsline's Neil Rapp, WB9-VPG, is a chemistry teacher at Bloomington South and is the sponsor of the K9-SOU School Club. Congratulations. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Graham Kemp, VK4BB, Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Heather Emby, KB3TZD, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW, 738. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We're coming down from a solar storm that pretty much fizzled, but all hope is not lost. There's another solar storm that's on its way. Those stories and more in the shorty this week. Space weather this week is getting very interesting. We're coming down from some fast wind from a collapsing coronal hole that, well, as expected, kind of underwhelmed us. We didn't make storm conditions. As a matter of fact, we hardly made active conditions, but we did get some decent aurora show, especially at high latitudes over the last couple days. Now, that storm is beginning to wane, and it's left the Earth shield pretty rattled, which means that the Earth shield is very susceptible to any more storms. And guess what? What comes next? Well, we had a solar storm launch back on November 30th from the south part of the disk, and it looks like the main bulk of it is going to go south of Earth, but the northernmost tip might actually graze Earth, and it could be enough of a disturbance to bump us back up to active conditions with even a tiny chance of storm conditions. Most likely not, but there is a chance, especially because the Earth shield is already rattled. So this is good news for you aurora photographers who missed out on this last storm. For you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, well, you know, it's going to look like it's going to be a bumpy ride here for the next couple days, but at least it'll give you some interesting propagation because, as you can see, the sun is still spotless. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that solar storm that was launched back on November 30th. Now, the front part of this storm will probably be a grazing passage because most of it is going southward of us, but the back end of the storm actually looks like it might give us a bigger hit. So at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting storming conditions. As a matter of fact, about a 45% chance of a major storm. At mid latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions. conditions, but we've got about a 20% chance of a minor storm. And these conditions could easily linger into the 6th and possibly into the 7th before things quiet down, simply because the Earth's shield is already so rattled from the previous solar storm that, you know, was a bit of a fizzle, but nonetheless, it still agitated the Earth enough that we could easily bump back up to some decent activity levels here. So your aurora photographers, hey, don't give up hope, especially at mid-latitudes. There could be a chance yet, so keep your batteries charged. And then as things begin to settle down, we're going to have another coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone, but it probably won't bump us up more than just like these unsettled conditions that we've been seeing. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week. As I mentioned before, we have a spotless sun right now, so everything is in the green when it comes to solar flares. We have no risk of radio blackouts. So you GPS users, especially on Earth's day side, you should be loving life. Your GPS reception should look pretty good. Now, as far as you amateur radio operators are concerned, well, spotless sun usually is bad. We have solar flux that's back in the 60s, which means poor radio propagation. But we do have these little minor disturbances from these solar storms. It's keeping us right around unsettled conditions. And as that continues, that could actually boost propagation for you. So don't let these numbers fool you. You might actually get some decent propagation even on Earth's day side. Now, because we are hitting it near solar minimum, the cosmic ray penetration is a bit more than it would normally be. So you frequent flyers, and this includes you air crew who are flying at high altitudes and high latitudes and flying over 800 hours annually, you are at the moderate risk for radiation dose, and this does include you prenatal passengers, so please keep this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week has definitely gotten interesting. Even though we're coming down from a solar storm that, well, kind of underwhelmed and fizzled a little bit, we have a chance for another. The sun launched a solar storm that's mostly going to go south of Earth, but the northernmost tip can actually graze Earth, and we are hoping that it'll hit us right around the 4th into the 5th, and it could bump us back up to active conditions. So your aurora photographers, definitely keep your batteries charged, especially you guys at high latitudes. Now, mid-latitudes, it may be another teaser here where you get a tiny bit sporadically here and there, but we're going to keep our fingers crossed. Now, amateur radio operators and shortwave responders, well, these mini solar storms, by keeping everything unsettled, that actually helps propagation a bit. Now, this propagation may be a bit more sporadic than you're used to, especially on Earth's day side, but at least it'll give you propagation that is a little bit better than what the solar flux numbers say right now, which is that it should be completely dismal. So let's hope that continues for a bit and gives you some decent propagation. And now for you GPS operators, well, as long as you stay away from the dawn dust terminators and away from aurora during these solar storms, your reception should look pretty nice. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Make sure you follow her on Twitter and on Periscope as well, at Tamitha Scove, because she gives you up-to-the-minute information. I seriously don't think the woman sleeps. I've seen her tweeting at 3 and 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning when I get up and look at my Twitter feed. So make sure you follow her. She's just absolutely amazing. And, you know, of course, now she's a ham, WXXSWW, and just an asset to hams everywhere and helping us understand what goes on the sun, which I don't know. I just look at it. That's all I do. Let's hear from a word from ICOM, shall we, while I go look at the sun some more. Oh, no, it's nighttime.
For the love of the holidays, surprise your favorite ham this season with the gift that's on their hot list. The holidays are just around the corner, and ICOM has plenty of cheer for everyone. IC7610, the SDR every ham wants, and just in time for the holidays. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR. RF direct sampling system, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. IC7300, changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. ICR30, raise the bar on DC to daylight receivers. Powerful yet easy to use, the ICR30 is packed full of features you've come to expect from ICOM. Built-in GPS and Bluetooth, dual bandwidth recording, high-speed scan, and there's an Android and iOS app available. The perfect stocking stuffer, the ID51A+2 provides new modes for extended D-Star coverage. Enjoy integrated GPS, independent AM/FM receiver, and free Android apps. Terminal and access point mode, send and receive text messages and pictures. DV fast data mode, and easy FM repeater setting. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
Good stuff. And make sure you visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for all the information on ICOM radios. You can also enter ICOM's weekly drawing for ICOM swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And check out the details on ICOM's monthly grand prize drawing like John KK5D did. He was the November winner. For the ID4100A, you could be the next big winner. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation for official rules. Check out all of ICOM's previous drawing winners. Sign up, and good luck, and thanks, ICOM. Got Amanda standing by in the chat room. What's going on, darling?
Thanks, Don. All right. I do have a couple questions for our Elecraft guys. And by the way, you two, I think everyone in the audience got this. You two work spectacular together, first of all. So I before I get into technical questions, I kind of want to ask you guys, what would you be doing if you weren't making Elecraft radios? Wayne, you go ahead first.
Oh man, where to start? Yeah, I'm kind of a creative compulsive sort of guy, so I would probably be playing acoustic guitar in a rock band and writing my next novel. Maybe doing a little bit of architecture on the side. You know, it's fun to do things that go beyond all of the technical stuff we do every day. So I don't know about Eric, but well, actually I do know what Eric does when he's not doing radio, but those are a few things that I'd be interested in doing. Also a lot of traveling and hanging out more with my family.
And I guess from my side, we already do a little bit of this. My wife and I are both scuba divers. That's how we met many years ago. And even proposed to her underwater. That's another story that we won't go into that here. But probably more of that. And she and I are both private pilots, and she's a ham too. So probably more flying too. But that has to take a back seat to keeping getting these radios out the door. So we don't get as much time on it as we'd like. We certainly get some. But we certainly have a lot of fun with that. And I guess the other thing I like to do is actually live music mixing. So I get involved in that and do that for some shows here in the San Francisco area.
Amazing. So no matter what, even if you weren't into this, both of you would still be part of the musician life. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we might be living on the street, but
that's probably true.
True.
The motivation to do more.
We could find you a van.
There you go. There we go. Wayne actually had a nice VW van, so we were all set in the early days.
The Elecraft World Tour.
Yeah, there we go.
Elecraft World Tour. All right. Let's see. A lot of the big questions were, is there anything you're coming out with new that you want to tell us about?
No. We always have lots of stuff in the lab that, you know, new technologies we're working on. But, gosh, you know, radios, accessories, things like that, they pop out when they pop out. Even our salespeople don't know. We really can't even tell them until something actually gets to the final stage. And one thing we've learned over the years with engineering is it never comes out when you think it's going to come out. We think, gosh, we're going to have something next month or next year.
Yeah, I mean, a good example of that is, I don't know, something like, I don't know, is it maybe 8 years ago, we had a prototype KPA 1500. And, you know, we learned a lot from building that prototype. But, you know, we decided that we would back off to the 500-watt level. And that's when we did the KPA 500. And, you know, we learned so much from doing that project that we then were fully prepared to do the CAT 500 and now more recently the KPA 1500. So. We did just launch a line of antennas and accessories. So we have the AX1, and we have the AX1 is a whip that covers three bands. I mentioned that earlier, Eric. If you've could find an AX-1.
I'll sneak off stage while you're talking.
Yeah, Eric's going to sneak off stage and grab an AX-1, which we had intended to show anyway. The interesting thing about the AX-1 is it breaks down into two pieces. It's only 6 inches long, 15 centimeters for our metric friends. And that means that the antenna will fit in your pocket or in a really small bag like an Elecraft CS40 bag. And we're definitely going to be coming out with new antenna accessories and hopefully new antennas in the future with emphasis on really unique designs that that fit applications that maybe haven't been all that well served, such as really ultralight portable.
Okay, so speaking of antennas, I know you want to show this one off, which is I think is great because one of my friends, a really good friend, W2IMZ, I'm going to give you a plug there, Jody, he bought a KX2 and he said, oh, I'm just going to hook it up to this buddy pole here and I'm going to see what it can do on a mountaintop. What's your typical recommendation for, you know, your SOTA activities?
Sure. So when you're doing a SOTA activity or SOTA activation, or if you're out in the field and you are not too limited on time, or maybe you've got trees available or other supports, we always recommend using the longest and highest antenna that you can get in the air. And that goes for your home station too, but it's especially true of QRP operation. Now, on the other hand, if you're in a big hurry, you're trying to deploy rapidly, or if you're operating casually on a picnic table, if you want to just hear what the band sound like, or if you're operating pedestrian mobile or bicycle mobile, then an antenna like the AX-1 here is ideal. That's what it's really suited for. It's for the people like me who like to take the antenna apart, put it in the smallest possible bag, and head out for the field and go on a hike.
One thing that you mentioned, SOTA, obviously a lot of times there's not a place to put a big wire up onto a tree because it may not be a tree up there where you are if you're on top of a hill. But you are on top of a hill, and so in a lot of cases, the really high ones, they've got a large downslope, which helps almost any antenna. And this antenna, surprisingly, like on 20 meters, there's a YouTube video I think we saw just recently of some guy working his way from, I don't know if it was in Europe, working in Australia.
He was in Switzerland.
Australia. And had an AX-1 with, I think, a KX-2 or KX-3 up on top of a mountain. So that helps a little bit, too.
Very good. And so this antenna is your creation. Is that correct?
Yeah. This, interestingly, the AX-1 started life in a completely different form. I was actually messing with variations on it and different prototypes for almost a year, trying to optimize the design so that it would be really rugged, lightweight, and break into two pieces and cover multiple bands. There's actually a switch inside this tube down here so that you can select either 20 meters where the antenna is resonant or the second switch position, which puts the resonance somewhat above the 17 meter band so that you can actually cover both 17 and 15 meters with the built-in auto tuner that's an option that's available for all of our radios. And as Eric pointed out to me when he first saw this prototype, there's just a little bit of Doctor Who to it, being able to see the coils inside the plexiglass tube. So that would, you know, looking cool actually is one of Elecraft's goals for
all of our
products. Actually,
if you hook
products.
It up to a KPA 500, we guarantee they will glow red, but I don't think it's a good idea.
Nope, nobody has yet put 500 watts through an AX-1. I don't recommend doing it for very long.
Ah, so take their recommendations, people. Do not do that. The other thing was everybody has a signature and yours comes through the names of your rigs. So where did KX come from?
Well, maybe we should drop back 20 and first ask where the letter K comes from. The K2 name was actually a little bit of a joke. That was our first radio. And what happened was, we were designing a QRP rig, and we were also right around. This happened right around the turn of this century, so it was 1999 going on 2000, and everybody knows what 2K means, and so we were thinking, well, it's the beginning of the next century. Maybe we'll call it a 2K. But the joke is that the 2K was actually the model number of a very high power linear amplifier. And so we just flipped the letters around and made it a K2. Now the KX comes from, that's X for extreme operations. So all of our product lines that include an X, the KX line, the AX antenna line, that X is for extreme. And you know, some people use it in extreme fashion, and others just use it on a picnic table or when they are in the living room sitting in an easy chair. But that's where the X comes from.
That's a great explanation. Thank you. And one other thing, I did have a question from someone in the chat room asking, have you heard any feedback about people traveling with these, with their lithium batteries, any problems, anything like that?
Well, aside from the, there's no real problem traveling. I travel with all of these things, all these radios and the portable radios. The KX2 uses a lithium battery. Actually, I'm using the power of the other radios. This is like a little 2.4 amp hour one off of it. These are no problem going through the airlines. They're marked with the amp hours, and so you're allowed to carry these on. Do not put these in your checked luggage. That's true for most any lithium battery. But in general, the radios and the batteries travel through fine. I've traveled actually to many countries around the world. In some places, of course, you have to show that you can actually operate in that country, the usual issues. But in terms of traveling between here and Europe, for instance, I've had zero problems carrying on KX2s, KX3s, K3s. I even had a KPA 1500 RF deck with me once on carry-on. So
another, you can do. Another quick comment about the battery. When we designed the KX2, we literally designed it around the three-cell lithium ion pack. Those are 18650 cells. So the pack is 11 volts, fully charged, and 2.6 amp hours or so. And our criteria for this battery was that it was absolutely safe. So we picked a manufacturer that had a perfect track record, never any issues with the batteries. And the other important thing is that we did insist that you remove the battery to charge it. So there's no fast charger built into the rig. You pull it out, hook it up to our custom, very safe battery charger. And all of the warnings about charging come with the battery pack. So we were very careful to make sure this is a really safe battery option
for
the radio.
Yeah, all the charge controlling and the anti-short protection, temperature and things like that are circuit board inside the battery pack here. So these things are rock solid. That's great.
Which is very important.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you. One other personal question. What is, I always ask everybody that's, famous coming on our show, what's your most memorable ham radio memory? A contact, working around the world, something.
I'm sure Eric's got a bunch of them, but one of mine was when I was at my mom's house in Arizona, and I was out in the backyard in a little trailer that she happened to have parked in the backyard. And there was a clothesline right next to it. The clothesline was about 7 feet tall. And I had an old radio with me that I designed a long time ago. It was the subject of a QEX article. It was called the Safari 4. It's a little four-band radio that put out about a watt normally. And the battery was almost dead. It was putting out about 200 milliwatts, according to the meter. And I strung about 10 feet of enamel wire from the radio to that clothesline, put another chunk of it out and tied it to some piece of metal on the inside of the trailer. And on 15 meters, I heard one station. It was a guy in Rwanda, CX5. Pretty sure I got that right. Kigali.
No, that's CX5 down in South America.
No, it wasn't a CX5. It was a CR5. I'm trying to remember what the exact call sign was. But anyway, it was Rwanda, and he gave me the city as Kigali. And he tried really hard for about 15 minutes. He got my call. He got his signal report. He got the fact that I was running 200 milliwatts, and it was just an amazing contact. And I've had other QRP contacts that were similarly difficult, but this guy really got a purple heart for suffering through that weak signal.
Mine was actually similar, but not on QRP. I was using a HW101 I built as a teenager, and it banned 20 meters. They're mentioning the solar report they just had earlier. There was a solar flare, corneal mass ejection. It totally wiped out 20 meters. Band was dead. This is about 9 o'clock at night on the West Coast, not expecting to hear anything. Maybe hear some local stuff, ground wave. And I get on, and I'm about, I think I was about 15, 16 years old, and called CQ, and I got a call back. I think it was from Mozambique, if I remember correctly. I'll make sure I get my call right. I think it was CR60R. But and this guy was like 20 over, and there's nothing else in the band. Band is totally quiet, no other people, no one else calling him. And at 100 watts, we had a I had a little tri-bander 5 feet over the roof of our house, literally, and nothing fancy, and had a great QSO for 20 minutes. And that was sort of the magic of ham radio, where you don't know what's going to come back at you. And I always try to, when people that are not hams ask us what's cool about ham radio, that's one of the things, is it's like fly fishing. You don't quite know what you're going to catch every time.
It really
time.
Is like
it's a lot of fun.
Oh, it was 9X5. That was
that would
call
make more
sign.
Sense.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. There we go. Actually, I have one more quick story if I have time.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So when we came out with the KX1, that was our first little tiny radio. We did our first field day with it at Mount Hamilton, which is in the South Bay, not far from San Jose, 6,000 feet up, and we're enjoying the view, and we're sitting there with at the picnic table. The radio is sitting on the picnic table, and I'm keying it with the paddle, and we have a wire going up in the tree, but it's an invisible wire. And two gentlemen showed up who none of us knew. They came over and sat down for a while and were watching me operate, and after about 5 minutes of watching me use this little radio, he set down his can of Coke, and he looks at me and he said, "Where's the rig?" And because he thought it was the Keir. He didn't see any evidence that it was a radio. It was just too small to be believable. And a few minutes later, his buddy put his beer down and said, "Where's the mic?" So there you go. We introduced a couple of new guys to QRPCW that day.
Very nice. Well, gentlemen, we'd really like to thank you for being on here tonight. I'm going to go over some announcements, and then I'm going to send it back to Bob to say his final farewells to you. Let's see. We have the Nets. We have 14 Charlie for D-Star. We have DMR on TAC 311. We have the 80 meter net on 3908, and I do believe that the 40 meter net is on 7192 thereabouts. Also, don't forget there's a Tampa Bay Ham Fest this weekend, December 7th and 8th. Go out there, have fun. All right, Bob, take it away.
Well, thank you so much. It's been such a great night. We've learned so much about two great giant companies in this wonderful thing we called amateur radio. And we're so happy that you could be here with us, and we could help you celebrate your great anniversaries. So we'll be looking forward to another visit sometime when Leo is back. That would be fun. And I appreciate everybody's time tonight. George will be back next week. He's got a couple of really nice things, and we appreciate him standing by this week because we wanted to focus on the great anniversaries, and we did that. So we'll be back next week. I will have video next week, so we'll continue on from there. Thanks to Josh and all of Burke and everybody back at Twit Studio, because we had a little situation to get it all going there, and I apologize for that. But thanks for coming up to the Twit Studio, you guys. I know it was a
thanks
little
a
bit
lot,
of
Bob.
Drop.
No
yeah.
problem, Bob. It's fun. Thanks a lot.
It's great.
Really appreciate that. Yeah, and maybe we'll hook up in another show and sit down and have a Dr. Pepper or whatever, and talk some more about some of your beginnings. Thanks everybody for watching, and be sure and listen to the Nets that are on the air afterwards. And do not forget, the WTWW has a lot of Christmas music. You don't want to forget that. So 7-3, everybody. Best regards. And we'll talk to you next week right here on the Twit Network. And it's Ham Nation. Thanks, Leo Laporte, and everybody. So long for now.